I literally have about 80 cover letters and resumes. And,
whoa.
You know, people know I ended up at Microsoft, but yeah. I think, you know, even for Microsoft, for my internship, I applied 16 times and each time I was rejected.
Interesting. 16 times rejected by Microsoft.
Yes. So, you know, for me, it was just that strong sense of optimism that just, and that stubbornness in me that kept me going.
Hey there, thank you so much for tuning in to Lift Ghana podcast, where we celebrate and uplift women in Africa and across the globe. Today we have a special and a wonderful guest, Abigail Amuakoa Ochi. Abby, I'm so excited to have you on today's episode. I appreciate that you made time for this. Thank you so much, Abby.
It's a pleasure, Gracie, and I really like the work you are doing at Lift Ghana. I think, you know, it's important to keep bringing women together and, you know, encouraging and motivating each other to do great things. So, yeah, thanks for all the wonderful work you're doing.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much. Abby, I sincerely love your spirit. I mean, knowing you from afar and even when we got close, I saw how you persevere. Like, knowing your story, I get amazed how you pull through life regardless of the challenges, the hurdles, the said anything that literally came your way, some way, somehow, you still didn't give up on what you wanted to do or you wanted to achieve. Today, I just want us to talk about how the journey has been like for myself, for women out there who are listening to us, so that if anyone, you know, has any hurdle, any setback, whatever it is, that beyond the tears, beyond the pain, beyond the struggle, beyond anything, you can pull through. Abby, knowing your story as a little girl who was in growing up in Nkoko with your mom, your sisters, how you went to one of the best girls' schools in Ghana, Wesley Girls High School. You went to University of Ghana to pursue a degree in accounting. Then had a SEMA program. I remember you were having SEMA after that. And then you went to University of British Columbia in Vancouver. Yeah. And then to Microsoft, where a news broke that you were the chief of staff. We'll come to that. I just want to know, how has the journey really been like? How was it going back from the beginning? How was it really like growing up? What are some of the challenges you really faced? I mean, we want to know.
Yeah, and it looks like, you know, you've told the whole story. I think I'll just say that three things three thematic things that cut across, you know, my journey has been number one, gratitude. Mm. Number two, standing for values, my values.
Yeah.
And number three, having this strong sense of stubborn optimism. And I think I'll talk through why.
Yeah.
So just like you mentioned, I grew up in Koko.
Yeah.
With my mom and my three siblings. I think one thing my mom wanted us to do, even with the limited resource, is make sure that we got education. So I was able to go to school. And I think in school, I chose to go to Gehe, which was very absurd, especially to my teachers, because people from our school would not ordinarily want to go to Gehe, but I somehow wanted to go to Gehe. I went to Wesley Girls, and then from there, I decided to come to University of Ghana, which was also sort of like a miracle in the turn of events.
Yeah.
During University of Ghana, I got the chance to meet a couple of friends who introduced me to the whole SEMA Global Challenge. And so that's how come, we went to Poland and to South Africa to represent Ghana.
Okay.
And then from there, I worked for a bit, and then I decided I wanted to go on to pursue further education. It had actually been a desire of mine.
That's after undergrad?
Yes.
Okay.
So I tried a couple of years and a couple of times, got rejected so many times. And I think in my third year and upon applying to so many schools, I eventually got the chance to...
Do you remember how many times you applied?
So I didn't keep count, but I think in the first year, so I actually started applying right after school, when after my national service. So I think in the first year, I applied to about like 3 schools, got rejected in 2 and got 1, but with partial funding. And so I decided to try again, which was the next year. Applied for a couple of schools, got rejected. I think I literally used every savings I had to just be applying for schools. If you know how much you pay for school applications. Didn't work out. Did it a third time. Applied to a couple of schools, and I would actually reach out to my friends and whatever recommendations, whatever schools they gave, I would apply. I decided to teach GRE in a standardized test institution so that I would be able to learn. So that was how I learned GRE, just so that I didn't have to pay for it. So
You were escaping the payment.
Yeah, so I was actually giving my time to also teach.
Okay, to make up for it.
So did that, wrote it, and then I got UBC, but then I didn't get funding. Actually, literally wrote to every government, private, public institution, every NGO I knew of at the time.
That's the Abigail spirit I know. She never gives up.
Asking for funds. Unfortunately, none of them came through. And so what I did was to, you know, apply to like international institutions like the MasterCard.
Okay.
And so I deferred my... Actually, before that, I did the GoFundMe to raise money. So I did a GoFundMe to raise some money, which I used to defer my school till the next year. And then I was able to get the MasterCard Foundation scholarship to go to school the subsequent year. And I think, you know, from there and during the MBA program, one of the things was to do an internship.
And
I could count, I literally have about 80 cover letters and resumes. And, you know, people know I ended up at Microsoft, but I think, you know, even for Microsoft, for my internship, I applied 16 times and each time I was rejected.
Interesting. 16 times rejected by Microsoft.
Yes. So, you know, for me, it was just that strong sense of optimism that just, and that stubbornness in me that kept me going, because even when they rejected me, I emailed them back and told them that, you know, if any opportunity came, I would be happy to take it. And so I was there one day still, you know, interviewing, and then I got a call that, hey, we have an opening. You mentioned that you'll be interested. Wow. It's in another province if you're interested. I'm like, yeah, sure.
Why not?
So that's how I first got into Microsoft.
Wow.
Interacted with a couple of folks, met my mentor, and I think it's something we can go into later, who introduced me to the chief of staff role that I got into at Microsoft. That
was all over the news. I'll come, that. Yeah.
So, yeah, it was... Also, I it's one thing I am grateful for, because it was because of, you know, the people that I came into contact with at Microsoft that led me to that opportunity. So I was the chief of staff for the VP for Microsoft 365 Security Engineering team.
Interesting.
Basically what I did, and I know a lot of people have asked me about what the chief of staff role is.
Is it like the chief of staff for the president, right?
Essentially, it works like that. Yeah, so basically, you maintain the rhythm of the business.
Okay.
So while the VP manages the relationship upwards, okay, you manage the relationship down. Make sure that, you know, the team is, there's great culture within the team.
Yeah.
They have the resources to do the work.
Yeah.
They are motivated.
Okay.
You know, there's the head count. So I did head count.
Mm.
You check for the pulse of the team. You make sure that, you know, you're prioritizing what the organization wants to prioritize at the time. So while the VP does the engineering stuff, you're basically doing the business side of things.
Okay.
So then I moved to the business manager role proper, which I did for the Microsoft Security Response Center, which is like an about 900 or 1,000 member organization within Microsoft.
Exciting.
So did that. Apart from that, also, I was the communications lead for the Microsoft Security Blacks at Microsoft community. And then I also was a council member for the women in security within the Microsoft. So
Abby.
that has been my journey.
Yeah.
And I think one important thing I also want to call out is, you know, beyond all this, I am very passionate about young people.
Mm.
And so I help out at the Grace Life Leadership Center, which our mission is to reorient mindsets and inspire a culture of selflessness among young people. And then I'm also doing this side gig, which is my own startup, which we can go into that conversation later. So I think that has been my my journey. Basically, being able to hold on to the values, being able to have gratitude for the people that came my way.
Yeah.
And also just having that stubborn sense of optimism when there were like blocks and pushbacks has sort of like carried me through the whole journey.
Exactly what I was about to say, that in all you said, I see one thing: tenacity, perseverance. Like, I didn't know some of the things you were, I didn't know you were rejected, you know, for Microsoft. Those number of times, I didn't know even you had to volunteer to TGRE to be able to escape the payment. I just see one common theme: that never give up. There may be blocks, there may be hurdles, there may be setbacks, there may be challenges, but let nothing stop you. And that's that positive spirit, Abigail, I've known that you have. And I think that any lady listening to us can clearly see that no matter the challenges that come your way, so far as you exude that positive thinking, I tried once, I tried a second time, I tried a third time, keep trying. So far as you don't stop, it would definitely work out, like it worked out for Abby. Abby, going back to some of the stories, right? Let's go back to maybe Wesley Girls High School, where I don't know how you did it, but I initially chose Wesley Girls, like when I was applying as well. And for some reason, like I was in Accra, but some people had made it look like it's only for the rich.
Oh, it's hard to get into.
It's hard to get into it. And just a day before the final list was submitted, I just went to change my school, right? Because I was like, what if I go and I feel intimidated and all that? Knowing that you were in Nkoko and Wesley Girls is in the central region, what really, even though your teachers were saying that, no, Abby, maybe you will not get it, especially because there's no trace or no evidence of people coming from there going to Wesley Girls. What was going on through your mind? Like, what made you still go ahead? What was that? Like, you were so confident that you would get it. What was going on through your mind during that time?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, looking at the community where I grew up in a bit of context, I saw a lot of, you know, young girls get into all sort of things, get pregnant, do all sort of things. But then I think at one point in time, I tuned on the TV and I saw, you know, students from Wesley Girls competing in the National Science and Math Quiz.
Mm.
And I think that was my aha moment, because I was like, this is what I am looking to. This is what I'm aspiring to be.
Yeah.
I want to have such confidence. I want to be able to be on a stage like what they were. So it got edged in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And so even when you know, my teachers were saying, choose another school. I was able to reason it out with my mom and my auntie, who was a big advocate for me, because at that time, you know, my mom doesn't have any formal education, and so she was actually relying on the information people, the teachers
especially
were
when your teacher says it, then that's it.
But you know, so I had an advocate in my auntie who basically came and said, if that is what she wants, give it to her. And I think I valued that. And from that instance, one thing I learned from that is, if you really stick to what you want, if you really stick to that value, you would get it. Because, you know, they were bringing other options. But because, you know, she said that is what she wants, she has a good reason for it. They kept it, and that was how come, you know, I got the school. So I think that speaks to that part. Going to the school, how was the experience? I think, yeah, just like you mentioned, I didn't grow up in a wealthy family. And so, you know, based on the kind of sentiments the public has, when I got there, I felt a bit out of place, experienced it. But I think for me, it was about turning those moments into positive moments. I remember, you know, going into a big dorm, as we called it, for a morning assembly, and everybody's like, no, you can't sit with me. My friends are going to sit with me. and all sort of like high school shenanigans. And I just went to stand at the back. I didn't sit. But I think leaving the room, I told myself, by the time I'm leaving here, I would make friends. So from then on, I would go, like, speak with some of the prefects. Some of them were ahead of me. They would call me to their room, ask me, you know, stuff. I would crack jokes, laugh, you know, build rapport. And I think what I learned also from that instance is, you don't have to, you can start your own network. You can basically build. You don't have to have a network, or you don't have to have a circle of friends. You can build one.
You can also build one.
And so I built a group of people around me who would, you know, advocate for me, who would, you know, share ideas with me. And so it really helped make the journey through Wesley Girls really worth it. There's something a headmistress will say, either you pass through the school, or the school passes through you.
Yeah.
I think for me, that time, it was just picking out what values I wanted to leave the school with, and what I wanted to make out of that experience.
Interesting. Fast forward to the chief of staff role you mentioned, right? I mean, now, if I become the president of Ghana one day, I know who to make my chief of staff. I'm definitely coming for you. How was the experience like? I saw you all over. University of Ghana was talking about Abby. What was generally going through your mind during those moments?
And it's interesting because it was a very reflective moment for me. I didn't actually think it would blow up like that. But for me, it just brought me back to the point of gratitude. And I say that because, you know, at one point when I was in Gehe, I wasn't sure I would get to the university. I wasn't sure I was going to get forms to apply to the university.
You were not going to get forms, like, as in terms of paying for the
forms? Paying for the forms to get to the university. At one point when I was in the university, I had to literally work and also be on partial scholarship to get to the school and also do sports.
Oh, you were working and doing your undergrad?
Yes.
Wow.
At one point during, you know, my national service, I literally didn't have a place to stay. At one point during applying for schools, I literally didn't have money to pay for the next application I was doing. At one point during my time in UBC, I didn't know if I would get an internship. And then there was this moment. It's like it just flipped. And here I was. And, you know, it was like the whole world, or like the whole of Ghana was talking about it. And so for me, it was a reflective moment. And it just reminded me that if, you know, I didn't give up and I kept pushing, There's a lot I could achieve. There are a lot of people I can inspire. And I say that because, you know, I talked about each of these experiences, but getting to that chief of staff role, I think didn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
I think that for all of us, wherever we get to is a culmination of all the experiences, all the things we've been through that gets us to that point.
That's true.
They were probably looking for someone who could organize, who could handle stress. And throughout my life, I think that that is something I had dealt with in some way or the other.
Yeah,
I didn't know that was where it was gonna get me to. And so I think, you know, for all of us, understanding that, you know, your experiences, no matter what it is, no matter how irrelevant you would think it is, it all adds up to that very point or that very opportunity that will come in some time. And so they are all worth it or valuable.
Wow, that brings me back to one of my episodes, There's Beauty in Our Stories, where I was sharing my life, because all these moments you were going through, right, you didn't give up. So once it was kind of preparing you for something, and there's really beauty in our stories, no matter, like you were saying, no matter how it looks, no matter how you didn't have something. One day, as you don't give up and you persevere, you can get to wherever you get to. Thank you, Abby. Thank you so much. Now, I mean, I know that you are a co-founder of something coming up, Zeron Analytics. Tell me about it. How did you get into data, you know, analytics and everything? I've known you to be a business type. What was the inspiration to being a founding member or a co-founder of Zeron Analytics?
Yeah, I think it's bits and pieces of all that you've mentioned. The first part is, you know, being at Microsoft, you get exposed to you know, opportunities that can exist in data technology.
Yeah.
But I think the core of it, and if I go back to the why story of Zeron Analytics, when I was when I got my MBA to go to UBC, one of the things I tried to do was to get a student loan in the first year before deferring my program. So I applied to all these global finance institutions, and they told me they couldn't give me funding. They couldn't give me a loan because I didn't have a credit score.
Oh.
So that was the first thing. I was like, why can't I get this? Because there is no data on me to be analyzed to give a credit score.
Okay.
So that was it. And then during my undergrad, I was doing a research on the corporate social responsibility reporting practices of organizations. And I remember going from organization to organization on foot. And then you get there and then you explain what you are trying to achieve, and then they tell you, sorry, we don't give information out. And so, you know, those two kind of sparked a why in my mind. Why can't we do this? Why don't we have the data to make all these things possible? Why don't we have information about someone so that it can be used to generate a credit score for them?
Yeah.
In 2016, when I finished school, I started a business. It was called Ejom. It was an e-commerce platform where people could buy literally any grocery and have it delivered to them.
Okay.
We failed. And I think one of the reasons we failed after a while is because we didn't base it on any data. We went in knowing what we knew. You know, there could be so many opportunities, but what will let you know your target market, the group you are targeting, is all based on data. Now, the final thing, and I'm still talking about why, you know, this whole idea of Zeron Analytics. The final thing was, before going into my MBA, I worked with SFL, Superfluid Labs, and I was working as a project consultant with the AI Commons on an AI for Good project in Ghana.
Wow.
So the project was basically to solve health and well-being challenges in Africa.
Okay.
And it was working, it was operating concurrently in Tanzania, Nigeria, and Ghana. We brought a lot of data enthusiasts and, you know, data all the data people, data scientists, and basically they were coming, it was a hackathon. They were coming up with, algorithms and things to solve problems. I remember one group was trying to build a solution so that people in the villages could use their phones to take an MRI and diagnose.
Wow.
But you see, there wasn't data to test all of these. And that stops some of the solutions we are trying to build. And in as much as there's open data available on open source, those data could be a little biased because it's not made for the African context. You will find those data, but it's normally westernized or based on people in the diaspora. So if you build solutions for the African continent based off on data you get from the diaspora, chances are that they are going to be biases. I don't know if you've listened or watched this Netflix documentary series called Coded Bias, but basically it's talking about why certain solutions that are built out here in the West do not favor Black people. That is because, for example, you get to a door, it doesn't identify you because the data that was used to, test that facial recognition didn't include a Black person.
Okay.
That is why you build a self-driving car and it would probably kill a Black person because they didn't. So all of these things got me thinking, and myself and a friend, that how do we come up with, you know, a data analytics company made by Africans for Africans. And so in that way, we are able to source data about Africans. We are able to create an opportunity for people in the West to invest in Africa. We are able to create an opportunity for tech solutions to be built in Africa based off on data that is available in Africa. And so the whole idea of Xeron Analytics is essentially to help take advantage of, you know, the growing need of data and how data is far advancing, machine learning, artificial intelligence, to build something, to provide an opportunity for businesses, you know, to have insights on which market they want to get into, what products they want to build, even for musicians, which target audience you want to target. So it's basically making data available so that people can generate data-driven insights.
And I love the fact that I see this resilience and even lessons learned, right? You mentioned that you started something called a dream and you were able to reflect and look at the fact that why didn't it work? Is because, and out of that sprang out another thing, and that is something called resilience. And I'm so excited that you get to share this. The fact that you, as a woman, you've identified something and you are taking steps to make sure that you are putting a solution out there. And I think this is something Africa really needs, and we are looking forward to that. Abby, as we conclude, there are so many challenges that women face, you know, and people are unable to break through certain barriers, certain hurdles, certain setbacks, certain fear, pain of the past and everything. What are your words to women who feel like they cannot get there? They think that there's so much barrier, there's so much, I mean, beyond the tears, beyond the pain, beyond the setbacks. What can women really do to be able to get to wherever they set their minds to get to?
Yeah, I think number one is the fact that there's so much room at the top for every woman out there. There's so much room for all of us to make it to the top. But most importantly, it's very important for people at the top to mentor and sponsor other women to get there.
Okay.
I think for me, one wholesome thing was knowing that there was someone at Microsoft who was willing to tell me about what the chief of staff role is.
Okay.
She's my mentor.
Okay.
She was in the role.
Okay.
She wasn't, frightened by the fact that she was a chief of staff and I was becoming a chief of staff, even though she's well experienced and advanced in her career than me. You know, having someone have that trust and sponsorship is sometimes what we need.
Okay.
Now, the second, and I read something very profound on LinkedIn that says, behind every great woman is a great woman.
Okay.
I think once we see ourselves in other people at the top, we are inspired to keep going. You might not have gotten to, you know, the pinnacle of your career, but I think at every point in time, there's an opportunity to hold on to someone and, you know, carry them along.
Okay.
Michelle Obama says something also in her book, The Light We Carry. She says one light feeds the other.
Mm.
And I think that is what we all need to do. We all at every point in our lives need someone who would advocate for us, who would sponsor us. And by sponsorship, I mean someone who will speak for you when you are not in the room. I think the second thing I want to talk about is, you know, the fact that, you know, sometimes it's like the people who make it to the top don't share their experiences of failures, fears, vulnerability with us. You know, for me, I thought, for someone who has made it to their top, they probably don't have a weakness. They don't have vulnerabilities. And so when I caught myself not being able to solve a problem, it just cripples me because I feel like maybe I don't have all it takes. But actually, every single person goes through that. And that's something that we need to, you know, understand. I can count the number of times, you know, I'll break down in my room and cry and then afterwards, you know, wipe my tears and go into a meeting.
Yeah,
that doesn't make me less of who I am or what I can become. But, you know, if as I'm sharing it, if I had gotten that sort of sense of, you know, possibility from other people, I would have thought, you know, that is what happens. But sometimes it's like, there are people all the way there and there's just another group of people and there isn't that connection, which is something, you know, we have to bring into it.
Yeah.
It's not as important as, you know, owning the fear, but also how you channel that fear into or that vulnerability into solving the problem that comes by. So you get to know that, you know, this is the vulnerable. You get to share whatever fears. You get to own that weakness. But what decision do you make after that? After you have wept, after you have had all those insecurities, what decision do you make out of it? Is it based off on the fear? Do you feed on the fear to make a decision and drive you forward?
Yeah.
Or do you get crippled by the fear and the, you know, the challenges or obstacles? And I think that that is something that as people ahead of us, as people share their stories on you know, your podcast, that is something that will sort of like sensitize people out there that, you know, everyone at the top there doesn't got it all together, if I may put it that way. But we all learn through the journey. I think the third thing is, you know, picking what your values are and running with them. If you don't stand for anything, you literally fall for
anything. Exactly.
And if you have some values, when those challenges or obstacles or tears come, it has a way of holding you together. You have something that, you know, you can hold on to. And so those fears or challenges are seen through the lens of those values. How do you react to those challenges, knowing what your values are, knowing what your mission is, knowing what your KPIs, what your KPIs are. And I think that really helps to push us through what comes our way. Ultimately, every woman can achieve something if they put their mind to it. And you and I are still on a journey, learning every day, not giving up, you know, putting a lot of work in it. And I think once, you know, you make a step every day to be better, even if you're not perfect, you can turn some of those challenges into solutions.
Amazing. You are not perfect. Take steps every day, no matter the challenge. Anyone you see out there, up there, has one challenge or the other, or has been through something or the other. Thank you so much, Abby, for sharing. I really appreciate all that you have shared here. I know that women out there, anyone listening to us right now has been inspired greatly. Thank you for making time for today's podcast.
Absolutely. And it's been an honor hanging out on your show and drinking cocktails.
Thank you. Thank you so much for staying with us. Until we meet on next episode, it's bye for now. If you are yet to subscribe to this channel, do so. We have amazing stuff to share with you. Bye for now.